This meeting is now being recorded.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everyone. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 4 IDN's Technical and Operations Call held on the 14th of September, 2017. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you're only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? Hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid background noise. And with this, I'll turn it back over to our co-chair, Cheryl Langdon Orr. Please begin.
Thank you very much, and good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everybody. We have our usual administrivia to start today's call. You wouldn't mind moving to our slide set for today's agenda, that would be appreciated. And while that's loading, I'll ask, is there anyone who wishes to make an update to their statement of interest? Not hearing anybody, and isn't an unusual thing when we call for statements of interest. We have got a couple of apologies noted, and of course we will also take any other apologies that come in to the list. We are going to be looking at financial evaluation, and if time permits, some more of the clarifying questions today. And of course we will make time for any other business at the end of the call. But is there anyone who has any other business that they wish to let us know about now? If so, please do so. Okay, not hearing anyone. We will ask again for any other business at the close of the call. I wanted to particularly thank, although she is a regular, Trang from staff for joining us today. She was officially invited today to join us because the topic of today, the financial evaluation questions, is something that we think having some fact-based input for us to consider, to hear from Trang exactly how things went with the evaluation of these questions would be very, very valuable indeed. So just at the start of the meeting, Rubens and I wanted to thank her for accepting our formal invitation, although we really think of you as part of the regular team. We do appreciate the specific effort made for joining us today. And with that, and especially since I'm only on audio in via my laptop, and my internet always being unstable and unreliable, I'm going to hand over to Rubens and move to the next slide. You all have scroll control, by the way. You should be coming up to slide 4 now and move to slide 5 for the first of our financial questions. Rubens, over to you, and I'll go on mute.
Thank you, Cheryl. Good morning, good evening, everyone. We are now at slide 5. Slide about started financial questions. These financial questions icon program review feedback, where I mentioned what was done by icon's own review of the program regarding financial evaluation. And one of the phrases that they mentioned in the report was to consider whether an alternative approach to the financial capability evaluation would be worthwhile. And that seems in complete agreement with CC2 comments, because everyone is not in 100% because they haven't found them, but overall, everyone said, oh, financial capability should be different. Everyone said that in a different way, like you shouldn't have that specific evaluation, you should focus on the other, you should have this or that, but everyone suggested a major overhaul of financial evaluation. And that contrasts a bit with one of the other recommendations from ICANN program review feedback, which was to review financial capability, clarify questions and responses to determine whether improvements to the application question can be made. The issue is that if the approach is changed, like we are seeing directing to, those questions would be of much use. So, if we change a lot of how the financial evaluation is looked at, it won't be much use of our time to look into the or a contractor's time or ICANN's time to look at how people perform it. And that's the cue for our invite of the week, Trang, so she can bring us more detail into what ICANN meant with its review feedback and what ICANN saw during the 2012 round. Please go ahead, Trang. Thank you.
Thank you, Rubens, and thank you, Cheryl, for inviting me on the call today officially to talk about the financial evaluation from the 2012 round. So let me just start with a couple of sort of overarching observations. The first one being that the financial evaluation from the last round, the criteria that were in the applicant guidebook did not really recognize different business models. You know, there was only one set of financial criteria that were to be applied to every single application, regardless of whether or not the applicant is a startup with no historical financial information and basically zero balances, or whether they are a large publicly traded company. The AGB and the financial evaluation criteria didn't recognize you know, any of that differences. The criteria also did not account for any differences in whether the TOD was to be operated as a cost center or as revenue generating. So it had one set of criteria, and it envisioned that everyone, regardless of the type of applicant they were and the business models that they wanted to run for the TOD, would go through the exact same process. So because there was only one set of evaluation criteria, that's what we used, and that was used for every single application. I think as the group deliberates on this topic, something to consider is to ask the question of what is the purpose of financial evaluation. You know, certainly one of the things that was very clear from the guidebook was that the financial evaluation was not about assessing proposed business models at all. And it's not about, you know, determining whether or not the proposed business models is viable or not. The evaluations, you know, were a set of criteria that were applied you know, to see if the applicant sort of had an understanding of what it would take financially to operate the TOD based on whatever technical infrastructure that they had proposed, you know, and whether or not sort of the T's were crossed and the I's were dotted, essentially. But as you can see from the program implementation review report, there were a significant number of clarifying questions that were issued for several of the financial evaluation questions. And so from that point of view, even though the evaluation was meant to assess whether or not the applicant understood the financial obligations to operate a TOD, you know, the large number of questions of clarifying questions sort of begs the question of whether or not the applicant truly understood that to some extent. So I'll stop there. Rubens and Cheryl, unless there was something more specific that you wanted me to dive into.
Thank you, Trang. This is Rubens King for the record. I think from what you mentioned, checks perfectly into what we are going to look at the next slide, which is the purpose of having financial questions and do financial evaluation. So, next slide, which is slide 6, we look into what are the threats being addressed. So what we could try to predict or try to estimate in the financial evaluation, whether a registry will become insolvent, registry will become not able to function financially, whether a registry will lack market performance, because registry might estimate its overestimate its performance and then not reach that performance and have costs that are incompatible with that performance, whether the parent company of the registry will go extinct or that registry will close that business line. For instance, if you have a brand TLD and applied for diapers and your company stopped selling diapers, you might cease to have a TLD. So if that business line is under possible threat, that could affect the registry as well. One other threat would be the unwillingness to provide financial statements, because financial statements are required during contracting, and it's part of the due diligence process for ICANN to establish a contract with the registry. And one possible threat that was mentioned was that someone could apply to a number of TLDs that organization couldn't handle if given them all that those TLDs. So these were some of financial threats mentioned that could be addressed by looking at financials. And what other ways we could use to address those threats? Not mention that we already have a continuing operations instrument, a COI, although the 2012 COI had requirements that violate money laundering prevention regulations, but that's a different topic that's being addressed at a different work track. But considering you already have that COI at some point, what else could you use to address those threats? You could really look at current financials. But there are companies that have went in being unprofitable for years or decades, and nobody challenged that those companies are solid enough to do business, like Amazon was or still is in negative, having no profit. You know, Uber is one. Should we deny those companies of having a registry just because they are unprofitable? And what happens with startups that we don't have any information at all of financial history? Should we deny because we don't know that they could pay or not? How many startups were started with zero history and now are billion-dollar companies? We could look at stock exchange, but before going into that, Frank has her hand raised. Please go ahead, Frank.
Thank you, Rubens, and I just wanted to add to what you're saying is that another areas that we saw some applicants struggled with are the class of applicants who are not publicly traded, but they are large organizations, and they and for them providing financial statements for the for evaluation purposes was not something that they were comfortable doing. So for several of the applicants from the last round, that was an area where they struggle with, you know, quite a bit, and where we as ICANN had to have a lot of discussions with them to try to make them understand the requirement and all sort of things. So that's another class of applicants that had also struggle with meeting some of the financial criteria. Thank you.
Thank you, Trang. So you already mentioned one other item in the slide about companies related to the stock exchange. You could look into companies with a stock exchange, but then we would cut off companies that are startups or currently not publicly listed. And then there is a question, it's a rhetorical question for now, that if is there a deterrence effect for having financial evaluation? So even considering that our applications ended up passing financial evaluation, some, most of them at initial evaluation, a few of them after extended evaluation, but all of them were applied. But does that mean that anyone would have been approved, or is there a deterrence effect that having financial evaluation, financial criteria prevents companies that wouldn't pass that from applying, and then that's why we don't have any failures in the evaluation? That's a question that I will leave for people to think while we go to the slide. So we can now move to slide 7 about financial evaluation, where some applications fail at evaluation. So let's look at why they failed. Two of them failed multiple financial and technical questions. So these are most likely misguided applicants, so to say, that were so misinformed about the program that they didn't know how to answer questions. So that's a different type of problem. So isolating them, the most prevailing factor of failure in initial evaluation comes right to the point that Frank mentioned, that 18 of those failed question 45 about financial statements. So most of them simply declined during initial evaluation to provide financial statements, even after clarifying question after clarifying question. And when they realize, oh, you really failed this evaluation, then these applications at some point agreed to provide financial statements or convince the ICOM why they couldn't. We had three applications that failed question 50, contingency planning, where two of those were open TLDs and one of them was a brain TLD. And one of the guesses here, since those answers were not public, that they possibly failed to get a funding commitment from officers, which was a requirement of question 50. I think, hey, I will have this and this funding, contingency funding from to fund the registry. And we had one registry that failed question 48, which was funding and revenue. And that TLD happens to be one DLTLD that's doing well, has 14,000 registrations, having never offered registrations for free as far as we know. So were they punished for not wanting to make a guess in funding? They didn't want to try guessing what would be the revenue, and they failed because of that. That's my hypothesis. So this is also not public information. So main question here is, why so many failures due to financial statements, which is exactly the question that Jeff Newman posted in the chat, what's about the most financial statement that causes failure. So is Frank willing to answer that? Please go ahead, Frank.
Ruben, this is Tran. Thank you. It's a question about the high number of applications that failed Q45. Okay. So if that is indeed the question, which I'm also looking in the chat, and I think that's what Jeff typed in as well. So there are a number of those 25 applicants that ended up failing initial evaluation for question 45 that ultimately just decided that they were not comfortable providing financial statements. They are the class of applicants that I had mentioned that are not publicly traded, but they are very large organizations, and that is considered, and that is not, that's confidential information to them, and they just were not comfortable sharing that information. So they were more comfortable with going to EE rather than sharing that information with us in initial evaluation. The remainder of the folks that failed Q45, if I recalled correctly, some of the issues that applicants had there were they did not provide financial statements for the correct period. As you may or may not remember, there was a requirement around the fact that the financial statements needed to be provided for the fiscal year before the application window opened or something to that extent. And yes, there were a number of applicants that did not provide financial statements for the correct period. So that was another reason. I think those were the largest two reasons. There were a small number of applicants that did not indicate the accounting methodology that was used to prepare the financial statements, but that was a small number compared to the other two reasons I provided.
Thank you. Frank, is that a question from Jeff Palmer? Please go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks. On taking out the cases where they didn't supply financial statements or they supplied the wrong ones, what did the evaluators actually do with the financial statements? Did someone actually go through those and determine whether they thought that that company, based on the revenue or the assets, liability, and equity, was viable? Did they actually do an evaluation, a subjective evaluation as to the health of that company? Was that actually done, or was it, look, just check the box? You provided financial statements, and they look like it's done according to general accounting principles, and that's it. Is there a little more detail you could give us on that?
Sure, Jeff. This is Sharon. The criteria of question 45 in the guidebook was pretty straightforward. It basically asked that the applicant provide an audited financial statement, and if the applicant is a newly formed applicant with no financial history or financial statements, then it gave options on what can be provided in its place. So the evaluation panel, what they evaluated was looked at the financial statements that were submitted and determined whether or not that financial statement included, a cash flow, a balance sheet, an income statement, et cetera, those items that were listed in question 45 criteria. There are some additional criteria for question 45 that I mentioned. The applicant needs to identify the accounting methodology that was used to prepare the financial statement. And then also the financial statement needed to be submitted for the right period, as I mentioned. So that's sort of the evaluation that was performed in the financial statement.
Thanks, Chang. I believe that answered Jeff's question, but Jeff has a follow-up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, and I'm trying to do a search as we speak for the question 45. But so let's say someone supplied an audited financial record. There was a balance sheet and all of that stuff that you're supposed to do, appropriate books and records. But the sheet showed that this company was operating at a loss and had no hope forever. I'm just trying to figure out what kind of subjective evaluation was done to determine the financial health of the company, or was it just merely a check the box? They have audited financials, they follow general accounting principles, they have a balance sheet, they keep appropriate books and records. I guess that's my question. Did anyone look at the financial stability of the company?
So Jeff, if the audited financial statement had a going concern, for example, because the going concerns in the notes of the financial statements is where the auditor would typically highlight any financial concerns with regards to that company. If there is a going concern, then that would trigger a clarifying question, that would require the applicant to provide an explanation for that. But that is basically the extent to which the viability, if you would, of the organization is assessed. Q45 had very straightforward criteria, and so, you know, the evaluation stayed pretty true to the criteria that were in the guidebook.
Thanks, Trin. Just a second or two. Jeff, do go ahead.
Sorry. Okay, just to drill down one step further. So audited financials are if there's no going concern, meaning that the company could continue to operate in general, but it doesn't look at whether the company could actually take on the additional business, right? Because you're using audited financials from the past year. So bottom line, I guess the question, Phil sort of hints at it in his statement in the comments. There was no real financial evaluation to determine whether the company had enough assets or, was stable enough to handle a new GTLD. It was really whether the company had audited financials and didn't have any ongoing concerns. That was what was looked for. Is that an accurate statement?
So, yes, I would say so, Jeff. There was no business due diligence. The financial evaluation of the application is not your typical business due diligence that you would perform on a new company. That is not the evaluation, and that's not what the criteria in the guidebook. So that's not something that was done. The other thing is that the financial evaluation doesn't assess business models. And what I mean by that is in question 18 of the application, the applicant has to state how they intend to use the TOD. And then in question 46, which is the template, the financial template, they are asked to put down projections, both from a number of registration as well as cost and funding projections for startup as well as for 3 years of ongoing operations. There is no evaluation of whether or not the projections that are provided in Q46 aligns, I guess, with the business model, because that would be sort of like a business due diligence type of evaluation, which was not what was performed. The criteria in the guidebook just says, here's a projections template, make sure you fill it out, and here's how you fill it out. And then the funding and cost, which is question 48 and 47, then look at that projections template and try to determine whether or not there is adequate funding, as well as whether or not the cost that was projected were projected for the time period for the 3 years of ongoing operations as well as startup, and whether or not those costs seem to align with the technical infrastructure that were proposed in the application.
Thanks.
Yeah, sorry. Thanks, Chang. This is actually really helpful, and I think also kind of is in line with some of the thinking of either changing around the financial evaluation or even getting rid of some of it. But I guess in line with question 46, so 46 says that in order to meet the requirement, get a 1 on question 46 to pass, you need to show that your financial projections adequately describe the cost, funding, and risks of the for the application, demonstrates the resources and plan for sustainable operations, and financial assumptions about the registry operations, funding, and market are identified, explained, and supported. So, but you said that there's no look at the business model that was proposed in the question, I guess, 18 or whatever it was. So then what guide did the evaluators use to determine how much it would cost to keep up sustainability of operations? Was it really just taken from whatever the applicant said, this is what I pay my providers, this is what I think I'm going to pay, and here's how my revenue will exceed that, and without any kind of paying attention to the fact that maybe the person thinks that they're going to get 20 million registrations in this type of market. There's no, just, can you just go into that just a little bit more?
Sure, thanks, Jeff. And you hit on some of it. Yes, the applicant, you know, would attach sort of a contract between the themselves and the back-end service provider, for example, to demonstrate sort of the cost aspect of it, right? And then that is then looked at, well, so, and then in the technical section of the application, the applicant also describes sort of the infrastructure that they plan to put in place. You know, are they planning to have 100 gold-plated servers, for example, versus, you know, three regular servers? You know, if they're saying that they're going to have 100 gold-plated servers, and in the financial sections, in the cost, they are saying that, oh, I think it's only going to cost me $100 to put in place 100 gold-plated servers. Well, that, of course, doesn't align. It doesn't make any sense. So that would trigger a clarifying question. But what's not done is, based on whatever in Q18 that the applicant described, and then, you know, they may fill in their projection template a number, an expected number of registrations for the first year, second year, and third year. We don't, you know, there is no, there's some review of that against the business model to see if some of that aligned, but we're basically taking whatever is provided in the projections template, as the applicant sort of projections on how many registrations they think they could generate, you plan to have your TOD completely open with no restrictions whatsoever, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get 1 million registrations that first year, right? If they think they're only going to be able to generate 100,000 just because they don't plan on doing any marketing, I don't know, I'm making this up, so that's fine if that's what they think it's going to be, but that number of registrations projection then needs to align with the rest of the applications in terms of cost and funding and all of that. I hope that helps.
Seems Jeff is now satisfied. So based on that context and the 52 comments we received, we can go to slide 8, which is straw person proposal based on those 52 comments. Most 52 comments were in favor of streamlining, some suggestions streamlining one part of the financial evaluation, some other part. So the consensus view was, what is reflected in the straw person slide there is there is no need to do any financial evaluation as part of the application process. So it still could be something part of the contracting process that ITEM would be allowed to require any financial information that they deem inappropriate, and which is in line with the corporate governance. For instance, ITEM is a U.S. company. It has to abide by OFAC regulations that prohibit U.S. companies from doing business with companies from Iran, Syria, North Korea, etc. So they can say, hey, don't come here if you are from these countries forbidden by OFAC regulations. Or you ask a credit report on you. So if your credit is on the market is too bad, we might deny you up. So maternity down, so be aware of that. So applicants would still be given a list of likely documents, so it would be a more exhaustive list of documents that say, hey, I can likely ask for these, including, for instance, audited financial statements or a reason for not having audited financial statements. So if they succeed, you might need to do this and that. So be aware of that, of those regulations, but they wouldn't be evaluated as part of the application process. That was the add up of all CC2 comments or that we've discussed. So we can go from the next slide, slide 9, which is named Financial Questions to Operations Discussion. If we do that, we want to evaluate the financials, what happens? One thing that we don't deliver on one goal that was mentioned in previous work track for discussions, which was to try block speculation through financial analysis. And the idea was that financial analysis would detect where someone applied to a so large number of TLDs that it wasn't feasible for anyone to get funding for that. It was the idea of bundling evaluation and taking my co-chair hat off. That was one idea that I suggested. And first, but going back to co-chair mode, I had to ask, was that achievable? For starters, was that something that was implementable in any way? It was a good thing. It was nice to have. I know that some other people mentioned support for that. I believe it was Michael Fleming during one of our in-person meetings. But the question is, what is achievable? So that's one problem. But there are some advantages to that, because if we streamline the process, and this is very radical streamlining of the process, that process would come with automatic fairness, because it won't need any time to evaluate those financial questions. It's already done. I try to research some other industries, what they use it in. I found one example that looked similar for that four-person discussion. And although it's not a financial evaluation, it's an information security evaluation. If you receive payments using banking cards, either credit cards or debit cards, you have to do some level of PCI compliance. PCI is the PCI Security Council, is the council that establishes information security practice. And for the levels with less transactions, PCI level 1 is the level with most transactions that you would expect from a major retailer or major e-commerce site. The other levels all rely on the called FAQs, which is self-assessment questionnaires, where company that is operating those instruments, those IT infrastructure, would evaluate and according to some guidance from PCI. So this is something that looks similar and similar risk gouging. And we have two issues here regarding problems that might arise when we combine the work track reports into a work group report. Is that if there is no financial evaluation, would that mean that application fee should have a floor? That was one question that was being discussed in WorkTrack 1, where application fee should have a floor. And it's possible that the answer to this question could be different, where we have some level of financial evaluation. So while we, in a WorkTrack 4 discussion, can go into fees because it's not in our scope, we as WorkTrack members that are also work group members and likely to be members of the World Work Tax as well. We probably need to be aware when we combine them all, whether this generates an issue or not. Same thing happens with applicant support. If applicant support depends on having those financial plans and financial information, and this financial evaluation is not there, then they have to add some information requirements for applicants that applies to applicant support, because they might want to look into financials to see how much that applicant is needy or not, how much that applicant is needing to have support. So if that top person moves along, which is something that we will know by this call, but some people prefer looking at a specific language, so a possible draft language for that extra person is available in slide 10, and we'll go to that now. That applicant will certify that funding for at least the critical registry services will be available even in worst-case scenarios. Applicant organization would provide sample financial spreadsheets for different usual business models like brand or exclusive use TLDs, current registry operators that are now adding more TLDs to their portfolio, or brand new registry operators that are now applying for open TLDs. So these models, like the models that were published in the guide, applicant guidebook, would still be available for people to make their own assessments, make their own calculations, say, oh, these look it seems that I can fulfill that condition of funding the critical registry function. So let me go to the what in the chat for a while. Just mentioned, so we have to go back to the original 2007 policy, which says the applicant must be able to demonstrate their financial and organizational operational capability. Yes, that would be a change in that policy. But let's see how people went. This is straw person proposal that moves along, that we can change the language that is in that policy for the one in the slide. Sharing much that in applicant support situation, support may be required to present in appropriate language and form, business planning, financial, etc. So exactly, in applicant support situations, it's quite possible that if we agree on this financial evaluation criteria, it probably needs to have a fourth for applicant support. And Phil mentioned that, so if there is no financial evaluation, then the overall mission statement needs to be points scored in terms of financial, technical, and operational capability. These will need to be points scored on an annual basis to check if there are any material changes. Well, we can define what is required for becoming a GTLD registry, but we can require them to establish an annual basis. Take anything that is ongoing needs to be either a consensus policy or part of the registry agreement. But that's an observation that can be carried to those discussions as well. And we have a question from Jack. Please go ahead, Jack.
Yeah, thanks. I'm mulling the thought of eliminating financial evaluations or criteria and thinking it may not sit very well with members, a number of members of the community. Are there alternatives that we could suggest that may be easier to evaluate and hopefully, and again, I'm not sure of the international applicability of all of this, so I'm really mostly speaking very U.S.-centric, so I'm not sure, you know, what others in other countries do. But usually there are ways to make sure that the party that you're doing business with is financially secure or stable. In the U.S., that can include things like credit checks, calling references, looking at the insurance policies or coverage of the company, verifying certain bank information. There's Dun & Bradstreet in the U.S. that produces credit, assesses credit risk. There's probably, I would assume, some of these types of organizations around the world. I completely understand the notion of getting rid of the financial projections, and because they're basically useless and just guesses anyway. But to just use that as the basis to not even look at the financial health of the company that you're giving a public resource asset to, I think is, I'm not sure how well that will sit. And Cheryl says there's a risk of being too U.S. or EU-centric. I agree with you, Cheryl. I am being a little U.S. and EU-centric, but I would, as well as Trang said, obtaining a certified statement from an auditor is another way to do it. I would think, Cheryl, that even in the Asia-Pacific region and others, there has to be some method that companies use in order to decide whether to do business with someone. I mean, even at my former company, before we took a customer on, if we didn't know who they were, we would do a credit check. Again, I'm not saying I know what those are internationally, but the notion of just getting rid of any financial assessment, I think, is a little too difficult to swallow for me, but personally, not as the chair, but just as personal. I think it would be difficult to change the 2007 policy, which merely states that you should look at the financial capability, and we could change that to financial health, but I don't think getting rid of it completely is going to be acceptable to much of the community. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. Before we move along your work, you just go back to the, let me see the slide number, which is one that mentioned that I can, slide 8, that I cannot be allowed to resolve any information deemed appropriate, and including mention credit reports. So the only thing that is, we are doing here is not preventing ICANN from asking any of the instruments you mentioned. So ICANN could ask or do credit checks, could ask or do a certified statement from an auditor, as Frank mentioned in the chat. ICANN could still ask for all of those. The only change is that it's not more part of the application process. So it's not used to decide contention sets. So everything that ICANN deem necessary, either to the corporate governments or to the public interest mission or the shared resource nature of the namespace, anything that they would want to require from applicants, they would, could still do. It just wouldn't be part of the evaluation process. They would just be listed in the HB saying, hey, we'll do this check, this check, this check, this other check, and any other check that I can deem necessary, because if you went outside of the U.S. and EU, there could be different mechanisms of getting that trust to do business with. So that would still be implying policy. So follow up from that, what's the ramification of not passing any of those checks would be not getting a contract. So the only possible issue would be someone that applied in a contention set and prevailing in a contention set, and then when it comes up to contracting, I can say, oh, don't like you, so go away. So that would be the risk. But the evidence we have from the 2012 round is that no one failed evaluation. So that's something that's different from 2007, because at that time we didn't know who passed or not, whether the approval rate would be 100%. So but, let's go to Cheryl. Please go ahead, Cheryl.
Thanks. Thanks very much, Ruben. Cheryl Langdon, all for the record. And yes, I think from my perspective, again, without my my co-leader hat on here, excuse me, for this work team, what we need to do is, I think, if we're going to make any change and not stay with the status quo, is to look at something that allows appropriate flexibility, meaningful results, and still maintain what this work team is obviously very much on about, that stability and the ongoing likelihood of stability in the domain name system once we put any of these names under contract and into perhaps the route. So just to respond, and I'm very comfortable therefore with the language, explanatory language in our straw person saying that ICANN would be able to avail itself of various information. I just wanted to, in part, respond to one thing Jeff was saying, excuse me, and also repeat something I've said in the other work track, and that was if we do find sufficient ability for ICANN to ask in its clarifying questions or seeking a specific financial information and alternative to traditional financial information, that there is some way of accepting the unusual without risking liability of accepting the unusual too much. For example, it may be in a hypothetical small island state or whatever type of business model and design for its new TLD, a perfectly viable thing to say in response to a question of how do we know that this startup is going to be able to maintain the costs of running its registry, to say that because I am the son-in-law of the chief and president of the country, that everyone will indeed contribute to my marketplace. And if that's the answer and that's culturally the norm and a reasonable expectation in that space, then I would like to think that something like the ICANN regional hubs may be able to assist in double-checking that that statement, that that is a norm, may indeed be ratifiable. So I think what I'm interested in is us considering the flexibility of exceptions or alternates to the more, in inverted commas, traditional sources of material. Thanks.
Thanks, Cheryl. Jeff, could you go ahead?
Yeah, thanks. I agree with Cheryl's comment on flexibility. I think ICANN rigidly had to interpret everything rigidly in this last round because they weren't given the flexibility, and so we should give them flexibility in certain circumstances, and this may be one. But the part that I going back to, you know, ICANN has the right to do all of this stuff, or to see it, because of the principles of predictability, and wanting to ensure that, you know, that the goalposts, if you will, aren't always changing. If ICANN's going to look at credit reports, let's say, it should state that up front, as you said in the guidebook, and it should state that you will be required to achieve a credit score of blank from whatever this organization is, or other similar ones, and it needs to specify that, and it can't just have the sole discretion to pick and choose based on its subjective determination. So I still think that as part of, I'm still not convinced that ICANN should not ask all of this as part of the evaluation process as kind of a, just to get you in the door. Obviously putting aside those that qualify for financial support and everything. But I do think that there should be, if they're going to ask for these things like compliance with OFAC or a credit rating of whatever, this should be done up front, even if it's just a check mark, checking the box, and not wait until contract stage. I think this should be done right at the beginning on the applicant.
Thanks, Jeff. Just to note that we are almost at the end of our call. So what I'm going to suggest is that people take this starting point and then provide what they believe could be done. This starting point was the only median point in all CC2 references, but that's why we have work track calls to have these viewpoints discussed, and then we can progress towards something that all members of work track can get consensus on. So let me go back to Sharon for the advice. Bye all.
Thanks very much, Ruben, Cheryl, for the record. And as we almost hit the top of the hour, I just want to note on behalf of Ruben and I that I think this has been a very useful and edifying discussion today. Clearly, we do have more to discuss on it, and what we'd like you to do is, as our work track, is to continue this interaction regarding this school person proposed language on the list between now and our next call. And with that, usual invitations will be going out, and slide set will be going out for our next call, which is on Thursday the 28th of September at 2000 UTC for 60 minutes. Thank you. You have perfect timing with your chat information. And obviously there's going to be a crossover between our work here on financial questions and that of the other work track that's more typically involved in financials. So thank you for attending. Thank you very much for the staff support we have, and hope that all of you will continue our conversation on the list. And with that, Rubens and I would like to say bye for now, and we can stop the recording.
Thank you, Cheryl. Today's meeting is adjourned. Everyone have a good rest of your day.